I was thinking about how special this life is and how rare it is. And if you're a Christian, Jew or Muslim, this is the first time you've been here. If you're a Buddhist, welcome back. And Tim Leary said, the most important thing in this life to do is to die. And I thought, whoa, where did that come from? Well, he was diagnosed with prostate cancer, which was terminal. And that's when he reflected on it and thought about it. And really, it could be very true, because most of us don't think about where we're going to go after we die. Heaven is such a, it's hard to put into concepts. And we don't know how to get there. And so in looking at the Buddhist afterlife, I found that in ancient India, we had six different places that we could go. The first one is the heaven realm, which is the perfect realm, and everybody's really happy to be there, and there's nothing you can do to make it any better because it's the best. But the problem for Buddhists is that everything changes. Everything's impermanent. And eventually you're going to have to leave that heaven, and you're going to be bummed out because that's the top, and all you can go is down from there. Now, the second heaven is almost as good, except there's a little bit of craving and desire and attachment and aversion connected to it. So it never turns out to be perfect. It's always wanting. But it's better than the other places you could go other than the top heaven. The third place you can go is the human realm. And if you think about it, we all made it. And the human realm has a little bit of heaven and a little bit of hell, sort of mixed together, and some days are pretty good and some days aren't. Some decades are pretty good and some decades aren't. And we work hard to make it as good as we think it could be. And generally speaking, we fail and we compromise and we come to a place of acceptance, which is a very skillful way of living as a human being. The next realm is the first hell realm, and it is the animal realm. Now, if you have animals, I know you love them, and they love you. And you can't imagine how that could be a hell realm. Well, think of it this way. Generally speaking, animals just want to sleep. They want to eat. They want to have sex. And they're totally confused. Now, that describes me as a teenager. So I was in that hell realm for quite a while. Then we come to an even worse hell realm, which is called the hungry ghost realm. And in the hungry ghost realm, there are these giant creatures, 12 feet tall. And they have a little pinhole for a mouth. And no matter how hard they try to put the food through the pinhole mouth, they never succeed and can't end their hunger. Now that would be terrible. It's sort of like a Macy's sale event, and you forgot your charge card. Now, the worst hell realm is where you go and you sort of look just like you right now. And you're walking through the park, and the leaves fall off the trees, and they cut you into a million pieces because they're no longer leaves, they're razor blades. And you're killed over and over again in many different ways, and you scream, and you see the horror of birth and death every day. But that's not forever either. Thankfully, it's impermanent as well. And when you're in the worst hell realm, the only place is up. Now, Siddhartha Gautama, 2,500 years ago, became the Buddha, one who is awake. We call him the woke man. And he changed the model just a little bit. He said, those aren't really places that you go when you die. Those are really mind states. And we have the six mind states, and they change all the time. And when you're reborn, according to mind states, you simply take on a different kind of consciousness. So maybe you're having a tough day and you're hungry, hungry ghost realm. Then you meet somebody and you don't like them, and you have sort of had this hatred in one of the hell realms. And then you see the love of your life and you go into the heaven realm. And it just keeps happening time and time again in one day, in one moment. You might be curious, how long is a moment? You can have as many moments in a minute as you want. There's no duration. So when we talk about mind states and different places to go, we're talking about just what's going on now in our present moment and how we're responding or reacting. Now the big question is, well, how do we get there? What do we need to do to go to heaven? And I don't know if you've ever asked your minister or your rabbi or your monk how to go to a better afterlife, but at some point you might consider that to be a valid question. You might want to say, I'm tired of having people tell me how to live. I want somebody to tell me how to die. And we're sure that it's just around the corner. Now, it's not a pleasant thought to have, but it gives us something to do. So, how does a Buddhist go to heaven? And what goes to heaven? Well, according to Buddhism, we don't really have a soul. Now, I know that most people want to have a soul, and most people think they have a soul. And I was born in Iowa, and everybody in Iowa had a soul. And then I come to Buddhism, and the Buddha said, well, you may have a soul, but that's not who you really are. So I can't talk about that. I thought to myself, wow. And then he went the next step. He said, and you don't really have a self or personality or an event that you call you. It's a process. But if you want to be somebody and you want to have a self and you want to have a personality, that's fine. It's okay. But that's not who you really are. And the idea is to find out who you really are. And I've got to warn you, it's going to be disappointing. Because there's not much to hold on to or grab on and say, wow, I'm so happy that I am whatever it is. Because everything keeps changing all the time, and so do you. My best decade in my life was between 50 and 60. I had a great 10 years. I got a lot of stuff done. I felt good about it. And all the other decades I lived through, they were okay. They weren't great. But I was still there. I was still working at it, trying to figure out, who am I? And when you come to the place of, it really doesn't matter who you are, it matters what you do, then you're making progress. So what do you need to do to go to heaven as a Buddhist? You need to be skillful. You need to be wholesome. You need to be empathetic. You need to understand that all things are connected. And you're connected to everything in this world right now, always have been, always will be, which is a little disappointing sometimes. And you need, number one, to stop killing things. Killing things creates bad consequences. Karma, consequence, killing is bad, killing is unskillful, killing creates a consequence that will make you suffer more and not less. You need to stop stealing stuff. Not good. You're not skillful. You're creating more suffering rather than less suffering. You need to stop indulging in sexual misconduct. Whatever you take that to mean. Because that causes more suffering, not less suffering. This is tough now. The next one is, you need to speak skillfully. I know when you're listening to somebody, especially a speaker, sometimes you wonder if their thought is connected to what they're saying. Or are they just talking? And I find a lot of people just talk and don't know what the heck to say. So it's my job to sort of try to dissect it and make sense of it. So speak skillfully. No lying, no accusations, no idle chatter or gossip, no false speech. Just try to speak skillfully and try to be mindful of what you're saying. And last but not least, to have good karma and to go to the heaven realm. Stop consuming intoxicants. You don't need to consume intoxicants. Your life is the best trip you're ever going to have. It's an amazing hallucination. And Tim Leary would agree with me on that. Can you imagine that all the stuff you're now experiencing is happening inside your head? There's nothing out there. If you could see me without the concepts that you use to understand me, you would be surprised. That's nothing. It's an image created by education and experience and preference. But it's not me, and it's not what you're looking at. You're looking inside your head. And it continues. It's an amazing little vehicle, this consciousness of ours. Even when you go to sleep, dream time. Wow, you're making all that stuff up. All those dreams are just made up, you say to yourself. Yeah, but all the life you just experienced is made up too. It's all made up, but you have to treat it with respect. You have to understand that that person in front of you who doesn't exist needs to be respected and honored. Okay, that shouldn't be too hard. Well, it is. It's a tough one. So how do we go to heaven as a Buddhist? If we have good karma, we have good consequences, and heaven turns out to be one of those consequences. So what goes to heaven is not our soul, because that may be lacking. What goes to heaven is our karmic energy. Now, you probably haven't seen your karmic energy, but you've seen the consequences of your karmic energy. So imagine you have this little boat, sort of a dinghy, and it has a little engine on the back, and you're going to the other side of the channel, and it creates a wake. And the wake follows the little boat. And our karma follows us. Karma is created by what we say, what we do, and what we think. And then when we die, just like the little boat that sort of goes under the water, the wake continues to the next lifetime. Wow, cool. And sometimes the next lifetime might be in Palos Verdes. You go, whoa, I had some good karma last lifetime, you know? Or you might end up in Koreatown. Sort of good karma. And you say, okay, well, this is what I start with. This is how I start my new life. And it's up to me to build it in a way that gives me an even better rebirth and even a better life. Or you might just take it for granted and not do anything to make your life better or your afterlife better. And it gets worse. And a lot of people start out really good and end up in a terrible way. And a lot of people start out in a terrible way and end up really good. It is up to you. This is a lot of responsibility. This is self-power, even though we don't have a self. We need to be aware of what we're thinking, saying, and doing in order to have a good life and a good rebirth, and it takes a lot of energy. There are times when you just want to sit in front of the TV and have some potato chips, and it's okay. And it is okay to take a break once in a while, you know, because this is tough. A lot of people meditate every day, or they recite the precepts, the five things not to do. And they sort of balance their life with that. But they're injecting personal energy into that process. And it will pay off. You may not think so, but it will pay off. You have to stay focused. Okay, so now, first century, India. Somebody comes up with an idea that changed Buddhism forever. They came up with the idea of devotion and prayer. Now, in praying to the Buddha, he's dead. He was a guy. He was a very special guy, and he reached his full perfection as a human being, but he was just a guy. So if you pray to him, it's going into dead space. But in Mahayana Buddhism, they have a bunch of celestial Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. For instance, Avalokiteshvara, better known as Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, the Bodhisattva of compassion, a beautiful woman holding a vase, has a little head thing on. Wonderful. Sort of patterned after the Virgin Mary when the missionaries were in China. So we came up with our own. And she listens to the cries of the world and wants to help reduce suffering. What a wonderful mental image that gives you. And then we have Amitabha Buddha. Whoa. This guy created his own heaven. And anybody can go, as long as they do what you need to do to get there. Faith, vows, and devotion. And one of the most important practices is simply to recite his name, Amitabha Buddha, Amitabha Buddha, all the time, everywhere you go, Amitabha Buddha. You could do Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola, Coca-Cola. Not the same results, though. Now, if you do that, and you do it consistently, the moment you die, the last thought you have is Amitabha Buddha. And he recognizes that. And he will personally come down from his heaven realm to escort you there. And you'll be part of his heaven realm. And what's really cool about Pure Land, which is what his heaven realm is called, is everything speaks the Dharma. The babbling brook speaks the Dharma. The birds speak the Dharma. The fish speak the Dharma. And you are guaranteed, once you make it to Pure Land, to achieve nirvana. Now you say, but isn't heaven the place you want to go? It's the temporary place you want to go. But everything in Buddhism is focused on one thing. The end result is nirvana. Now, people say, well, what is nirvana? I don't know. You know, I'm not even close yet to nirvana. I may just decide to go to Pure Land. That's probably the fastest and easiest way to do it, because to achieve nirvana in the old way, through self-power, it takes many, many lifetimes. Many lifetimes. And can you imagine how disappointed you would be at the end of all those lifetimes? You've worked so hard, you've met the best people, you've listened to the best teachers, and still, you're not there yet. And now you have to die again and go into the six realms and hope for the best. And then you come out And the problem with that is you're not going to know what you did in the last lifetime. That's a distant memory that's faded. You know, people said to me, have you ever been a Buddhist before? I was born in Iowa. I didn't know about Buddhism until I came to L.A. And that was in the 60s and 70s that I finally dawned on me that there's something other than being a Lutheran, which my family was. And they were very happy being Lutherans. But for me, when I heard the Dharma, when I heard what the Buddha said, I wanted to find out about Buddhism. Because it was talking to me personally. It was telling me how to be a better human being in every situation. And I like that idea. And some people say, well, it's a psychology. Some people say it's a lifestyle. Some people say it's a religion. Well, it's all those things. It depends what you need. Somebody asked me the other day, can a Christian be a Buddhist? I said, well, if a Christian studies Buddhism, they're probably going to become a better Christian. Nothing wrong with that. And if you're a Jew or a Muslim or whatever you are, Buddhism may help you be better, but it won't help you be a Buddhist. It's a personal choice, and it's just a concept. There was a book that came out in the 70s. If you see the Buddha, kill him. Tripped me out when I read that. What do they mean? Who would kill the Buddha? The idea in the book was the Buddha is simply a concept. Don't buy into the concept. It's not real. It's your headspace. It's in there floating around. It doesn't mean anything. To be a Buddhist, you have to do something. You have to get involved with the activity of Buddhism. Maybe turn into a vegetarian. Though you'll be killing millions of vegetables, but it'll be okay. Maybe meditate. Take a little time to meditate. Well, somebody said, you know, I don't have 15 minutes to meditate, when he was talking to his teacher. And his teacher said, well, if you don't have 15 minutes to meditate, do it for 30 minutes. He was disappointed to hear that. So it's what you do, and it's where you're going, and what we do in life leads us to what we're going to do in death, which is an important consideration. And the thing about death is you don't know. You don't know. Somebody said the other day, would you want to know when you're going to die? So you could plan ahead. Maybe do parachuting for the first time because you know you're not going to die on that day. And you know what? I don't want to know. I've grown used to the mystery. I love the mystery of life. I didn't know I was going to make it today. Every time I get on the 101 or the 405, that question arises. You know, so I like the mystery. And every moment is the first moment, and every thought is the first thought. And everything I do for the first time. And what a joyful explanation of life that is for me. That I don't get bored. I haven't done it 1,000 times before. In my mind, I can say I did. But every time I went out and did this and went out and did that, everything was totally new and totally different. And there were some conditions that were necessary for it to happen again, but it happened again in a different way. People say, do you ever give the same talk? I say, no. I never give the same talk twice. I haven't figured out how to do that. When you're speaking in a way, that you're just listening to the flow in your head and transforming it into words, you can't do it the same way twice. But that's okay. It said the Buddha only gave 10 talks in his entire 45 years of teaching. But he 10 talks in 10,000 different ways. And every audience he faced, He had to get his talk connected to the audience, so things needed to be changed. Because every time you're in front of an audience, it's a new audience, it's a new day, and will they understand what the heck you're talking about? And do they need to? Sometimes what they don't hear is more important than what they do. Because they're adding something. They're personalizing it. They're making it theirs. Instead of just reiterating or regurgitating what was said by the speaker or the mentor or the minister, they're making it theirs. And once you make their talk yours, it has a power over you. And you're in charge. And it will change the way you perceive yourself forever. So the guy who's standing up here now, in a few years, will be at level 8. And who will he be? And will he need to talk about anything? Will he be able to talk about anything? Well, he has podcasts, so yes, he will. But that's the joy. So, as Spock on Star Trek might say, live well and die well.